What's up, everyone? It is another edition of Team Turnbuckle. I am your host, Keith Fleming. This is the first of what we're going to start doing, two podcasts per week. One will be around the middle of the week. It'll be on Raw and SmackDown. The other will be on sometime during the weekend, and it will be AEW and NXT. The reason we want to do that is we want to try to keep the podcast under an hour. We want to be able to, you know, go over as much information as possible, particularly, each episode of all of these shows. And it's really difficult to do with four shows. And then also we like to talk about the news, that's going on in the week of wrestling. But with me, as always, is my co-host, Ronnell Tinsley. Ronnell, how you doing, buddy?
Keith, I'm doing well. Outside of the technical difficulties in trying to dial in, I am a blessed man.
Well, that's always good. We're actually getting ready to swap the software we use to do these podcasts. So hopefully the new software will be a little bit easier and more user-friendly. That is what RC, the man, the myth, the legend, has told me. Before we get started, we're going to start with SmackDown. I just want to real quickly tell people that we are now on Spotify. Please be sure to like or follow, the IV Sports page, as well as the Televangelist podcast. That's RC's TV and movies podcast. Me and him did a podcast earlier this week on that feed going over this season of Better Call Saul, Ozark, and the wild documentary Tiger King. And also, if we are on iTunes, please be sure to rate and review and follow. But let's get right into this. Before we get into SmackDown, we always go through a few stories that are going around. There's two that I sent you on the outline. We'll go over those, and then one bonus one that I saw recently. But Cain Velasquez was released by WWE. I don't think this was a huge surprise. His feud and introduction, his battle with Lesnar was really a flop. The only thing I will say is it really upsets me that Cain was brought in, and because of it, Kofi's amazing title run was, I don't want to say ruined, but they really messed up, in my opinion, how great that title run was by having him lose it. Not only the way he did in the match, but the way they built it up. It was something that was just thrown together. And it was all to get to, basically the Vasquez-Lesnar match that they thought would get some attention because of the MMA history. Are you at all surprised that they released him? And do you think that they missed an opportunity with him from some of the stuff we've seen from him in other wrestling organizations?
They definitely missed the boat, for sure, with him being Mexican and, of course, going to his roots and getting a little background, the Luchador kind of circuit. He had the opportunity. Am I upset about it? Absolutely not. Unfortunately, it was grossly overused. I really disagree with the fact that they did all that to take the strap off of Kofi like you. I don't necessarily know if one tied into the other, but the fact that Kofi's great run was cut short just for a terrible Saudi Arabia match, I wasn't digging it at all. So, I'm not really going to miss Cain Velasquez, and I'm sure my man's doing pretty well for himself no matter what.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what he does moving forward because I will admit I saw some of his, matches from AAA on the internet after he was released, and he's a lot better than I thought he was. So it was kind of interesting, is the word you could use, that WWE used him the way they did, trying to make it more of like an MMA fight when it appeared like he actually could wrestle a little bit. And, they just really wanted to have the Brock feud. And when that kind of went south and they had already gave him, from what we heard, a good bit of money, they cut their ties and their losses and moved on. The second story, and I don't know for a fact that this is, A equals B. Jerry Lawler, the king, got himself in trouble again 2 weeks ago on Monday Night Raw, saying some very inappropriate comments about Kerry Sane. If you want to Google them, you can. I'm not going to repeat them. This is something that the king has a long history of. I agree with his response that he said that, you know, Hill commentators have a role. They're supposed to upset people. But he crossed the line with his comments, and he's like I say, has a history of that. They replaced him with Samoa Joe on Monday night. It was interesting that they started the show by saying, back by popular demand, Samoa Joe. So they played it off as Samoa Joe was back because the, you know, the fans had been clamoring for it, and not because Jerry Lawler was being punished for his remarks. Do you think those two things do equate to where Lawler was being punished? Do you think he's going to be back anytime soon on Raw? And do you like Samoa Joe being the third person if he does not come back?
It's weird because I'm glad that you brought this up, because when I was watching that episode, I wrote it down somewhere and I failed to bring it with me. But it was some kind of like, there was that and there was something else that he had said. And it's like, ooh, you know, King, that stuff kind of flew in the 90s, early 2000s. You can't really sail that ship anymore. And so I kind of am not surprised that this move came. I like Jerry Lawler and what he does. And, yes, I appreciate heel commentary. But, you know, to a degree, you know, we kind of do have to evolve with time. And you got to work on your craft a little better, my man. I mean, he's fantastic, but, you know, it's not a surprise that they pulled it like that. And I don't mind Samoa Joe, actually. Joe actually does quite well in the commentary. He can keep it flowing. And, you know, he'll go both sides. He'll play both face heel depending on the certain action that happens in the ring. So I'm okay with Samoa Joe replacing the king.
I will say that I actually watched a documentary this week on Jim Carrey and making the movie Man on the Moon. And, you know, Jerry Lawler was intertwined in that, both in the real story and also in the documentary, because Jim Carrey swears that Andy Kaufman's spirit encompassed him while making that movie, and honestly treated Jerry Lawler from the documentary just like an ass. And Lawler actually said to him at one point, you know, me and Andy Kaufman were friends. Like, the whole thing between us was staged, and we talked. And, you know, that was what Andy Kaufman did ahead of his time, was, you know, he really believed in you know, not only making people not know if something is real or fake, but he wanted to live that life. And it made sense that he was a huge wrestling fan, because for so long, that's the way wrestling was. You know, no one would ever speak out and say that something was scripted, or, you know, the decisions were predetermined, the kind of things that you hear today. So I kind of understand that, you know, Jerry Lawler is probably from an old school mentality, and unfortunately a lot, and I'm not giving him a pass, but I'm just saying that, like with a lot of older people, it's kind of hard to teach an old dog new tricks. And I wonder if that didn't play a part in him still thinking that he's doing what he should by being a heel. I mean, he used to, you know, talk about women's breasts and call them puppies for years, and people loved it. But like what you were saying, that was the late 90s, or if this is somebody who just has some hateful opinions and they sort of creep out when he's doing commentary. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt when I see something like a documentary that this was 20 years ago. And he really was. He was great to Jim Carrey during that. And I mean, Jim Carrey was just awful to him. So do you kind of see what I'm saying there?
I do. I never actually got around to watching Man in the Moon. I wasn't but hearing that Jim Carrey was kind of acting like that, and also based on the fact that not understanding how the business works, it doesn't surprise me.
So two other things, and then we'll get to the actual show breakdowns. There was a report posted today in the Ivy Sports Group on Facebook. We had discussed this 2 weeks ago when talking about the layoffs. I had mentioned in that report that WWE had a lot of cash on hand, almost $500 million. So it was not surprising, but it was not necessary to cut all of the employees. And part of the reason in that report was Vince had lost a lot of his personal wealth with the XFL filing bankruptcy a few weeks earlier. And he was trying to, get dividends back, not only as a stockholder, but also keep investors happy. That obviously those moves, which were, cost-effective moves, have made the stock rise. And now there's a report that potentially he is going to sell the company to ESPN or Fox. I know both of us commented on there that we've heard rumblings. I mean, we talked about this 2 weeks ago. That would make sense why he was doing that, trying to basically get the value of the company to rise. But I just can't believe it until I see that in writing. You're in the same boat, correct?
Yeah, I'm with you. I understand that right now, the company's kind of losing money and such. But, from its investments, et cetera, I still just – I can't buy it. It would be hard to understand it going to two companies, especially with it being ESPN and Fox. That'd be a hard play considering that they're still contracted with the U.S. Network for Raw. So I don't see how in the world they'd be able to manage that, especially selling it to two different companies. Now, if they were going to Fox solely, which I don't know if they have the money to really do that, possibility, still the USA thing looms big for me. So I'm going to wait to see how it all plays out. Rumors just are just that until we get any kind of real truth to it.
I also think that there's a very good chance that the person who floated this is not the greatest source. I believe that he caught some smoke and not the fire, because there has been rumors for a few weeks that they are trying to sell the pay-per-view rights, which would make a little bit more sense of that going to ESPN Plus, or I think Fox Sports also has a premium package. And that would make more sense than Vince just giving up control of a company that he's fought like hell for four decades, to have. It just, to me, would not make sense. The last thing before we get into the two shows is, and this is going to kind of move ahead a little bit to Raw, which is the second show we'll talk about, but Apollo Crews has an injury. He is not going to be in the Money in the Bank match. They're going to have a gauntlet match to make up that fifth. There's still one spot available on SmackDown as well. That's going to be between Otis and Dolph Ziggler this Friday. But there's going to be a gauntlet match, a last chance match. They have not given all of the participants, but most people believe that Austin Theory, Buddy Murphy, MVP, I hope they put Andrade in there. If you're looking at Raw's roster, what guy that is not in there and does not have a match at Money in the Bank would you put in to replace Crews?
Quite honestly, right now I go with Andrade, just because, number one, it would play more into story. We don't know if we're being worked over right now with this angle. Because personally, I feel bad for Apollo Crews. We had talked about him being mismanaged only but a couple of weeks ago, not on the last show as well. And here he is. He's starting to finally get a little bit of a push and gets injured. So I think with the fact that he pinned Andrade in their match that we're going to be speaking about soon, leaves it a little open. So whether Andrade wins Money in the Bank or not, at least there's a tailor-made comeback story for him to just come back into.
And, you know, hopefully he'll be right back in the U.S. title picture, or at the very least, you know, feud with Andrade to get to the U.S. title.
Yeah, I agree. I think Andrade is the best choice. I don't know if they pick him to win, but, I mean, he's United States champion. If you're really going to push him, you know, it would be something to have a belt and the briefcase. I believe Seth did for a small period have the IC belt and the briefcase, but I can't remember for sure. But, you know, that's a lot of goods to have on one guy, and that would obviously mean that they're pushing him. And sometimes, especially when there's not a crowd, success, I feel like, is playing more of a factor in sort of people's opinions of guys than ever before, because there's not a crowd there either getting really behind them or getting a lot of heel heat on them or whatever. So that would make the most sense. But we're going to start with the SmackDown review. And remember, the earlier in the week podcast, like tonight, we're going to just go over Raw, SmackDown, any news in that time period. Then later in the week, we will recap AEW and NXT, which both are on tonight. This is the SmackDown show from April 24th. The show opened with a New Day celebration. They are now celebrating their 8th tag team title victory. That is the second most tag team title reigns in the history of the WWE. Kofi really put Big E over by saying, you know, that he was the only reason they had this 8th reign, which technically was true because he won a triple threat singles match for the tag team titles. But as it seems like every opening promo does nowadays, they were interrupted by the Lucha House Party, eventually Miz and Morrison, then the Forgotten Sons. And I'm so tired of this. Like, I'm so tired of shows starting off with a guy in the ring either giving a promo or being interviewed by somebody. And then you have, you know, if it's a tag team, you know, either one or multiple teams come in to set up a match later, or if it's a singles, same deal. It's just, you know, rinse and repeat. They should be doing creative stuff right now, and it's almost like they're on autopilot. But my question from this segment, because I do believe New Day is now in, like, the serious conversation of one of the greatest tag teams ever, where do you have them roughly in the pantheon of all-time tag teams?
That
in
is
WWE,
a fantastic question. I got what you mean. And I can even, for me, even speak to all-time. I mean, we have to start putting these guys in top 10 all-time, you know, all-around, WWE-wise. Probably going to be within the top 3 to 5, you know. 8-time tag champs, nothing to sniff at. You spoke about them being the longest reigning. What they did with, they were put together, and it was supposed to all be a joke, and they've been able to make this run as long as they have. I mean, man, this run has lasted longer than a lot of factions have, you know. So they've turned something – I mean, they turned nothing into a whole lot of something, being able to sell merch, consistently keep the crowd engaged. So I'm definitely comfortable with WWE-wise putting them in top 3 to 5 tags of all time.
I'm 100% with you. I mean, I'm not going to say the best ever, like, you know, the top 5 ever. This is my list because – that's not really fair. I mean, I love and watch a lot of wrestling. I don't consider myself an expert. A lot of this stuff is, you know, just your opinion. So I'm just going to go. There's a few tag teams that I personally had more enjoyment out of watching the characters and the wrestling, and that's the Hart Foundation, the Road Warriors. I loved Edge and Christian. And then I'd have the New Day there fourth. And fifth for me would be Demolition. Now, obviously, mine is more, you know, tilted towards when I was a kid, because obviously that's, you know, when you really love wrestling and, it, you know, it's everything for you. Now, as an adult, I'm looking at it more from, I don't know, almost like a critic standpoint. So it's the joy that you would get when you're a child. And then the one team that I have right outside of them, because they just didn't have the time together, was the Rock and Sock Connection, who I just absolutely loved when the Rock and McFoley were together. But, I mean, to your point and what you're saying about the New Day, I would assume that they've sold more merchandise than any tag team ever. I think that's a definite. I think it's really cool that these guys, I'm sure they have their own aspirations, but they enjoy being a group so much. They enjoy, obviously, the money they're making off of, selling T-shirts and cereals and all that stuff. But for them to stay together and to make that choice, because I've actually read a few articles when I've researched it, that they've had opportunities to split, and it's been more their decision that they don't want to. And so, I mean, this could end up being the greatest tag team ever. I mean, if they have another 2-3 years and end up breaking, the tag team championship title for the most time record, then they're going to have a real legit argument for it. And I just love that they brought back the Freebird rule, which is something we hadn't seen since, the 80s with the Freebird. So they definitely belong in that conversation. And I also think the Usos do as well. The second match
totally.
On
The Usos definitely will. I'm sorry.
I agree.
I was just
saying.
No, you're
good,
definitely
man.
Agree with the Usos. No, go right ahead.
The second match was a Money in the Bank qualifier. It was Baron Corbin defeated Drew Gulak. He had an assist from Shinsuke and Cesaro. Daniel Bryan was at ringside for Drew Gulak. Cesaro and Shinsuke came down, got Bryan, that distracted Gulak, and Corbin took advantage of it to get the win. Do you think that's the right decision to have Corbin in the Money in the Bank over Drew?
Yeah, absolutely. You need somebody that kind of brings some heat in there. Baron Corbin definitely will do that. I know that you and I kind of discussed a little bit about Baron Corbin, and we'll probably touch on him a little further in a moment. But you got to appreciate what he brings to the ring, especially he can draw heel heat with pretty much anybody you put in front of him and make you care about him getting his face punched in. So, you can't really ask for much more. So I'm happy with the Corbin getting in there.
Yeah, I am too. He deserves it. Honestly, I think he deserves to win this match, because he is like the perfect guy to have the Money in the Bank briefcase. Now, I will say, if you want to play devil's advocate, there's not going to be a crowd there. So the heel heat isn't as big of a deal as it normally is. And so if you wanted to take a chance on Drew Gulak and really go a bunch of young guys that have not had opportunities, this would have been probably the one chance to do it, because, again, there's no crowd there. But I definitely think Baron deserves that, and that was the right call. Something that I've been thinking about, I'm a huge Baron Corbin fan. I think he's the best heel in the biz right now. And I mean, WWE, AEW, Jericho is great, but he's not a real heel. I mean, people love Jericho. He's that kind of heel. And I almost think that's a different subsection of heels to where Corbin is a true heel, where he comes out, gets the crowd pissed. Whoever's facing him is going to get cheers. It's a very valuable position in wrestling. But I'm a little sick of the King Corbin, push and gimmick. I thought it was a great decision when they did it. It hasn't worked out as well as I thought it would. I thought that they needed to do a little bit more than just call him King Corbin and occasionally have him, wearing a crown and stuff like that. But are you tired of the King Corbin? What would you do with Corbin if you were him, trying to kind of just tweak his heel character a little bit to get him back on track?
That's kind of tough. They are just reviving this entire thing, the King of the Ring, et cetera, et cetera. So I think he held it down fairly well, and he continues to use his realness as part of his douchiness, which is great. Yeah, I think it's about time. I'm not certain when the next King of the Ring tournament is supposed to be or whether or not they're going to do it again this year. But, yeah, I think it's time to just put that away. Let him just go back to being himself and, you know, continue to do what he does. It's great that he doesn't really need much direction. Just, hey, this is who you're going to be with. And he goes there and makes it happen.
Yeah, I completely agree. I wouldn't have a problem with him starting, you know, a heel faction. I know Vince is not huge on factions, but I think it would be good if you want to call up a couple of heels from either NXT or guys that are not being used on the Raw and SmackDown roster and let Baron be the mouthpiece because they're going to get, you know, heat off of Baron. So that would make sense. Next, Sheamus won a squash match. That's his second straight. It appears they're setting up because of the vignettes and when they're running them. A Jeff Hardy versus Sheamus feud. I actually just lost Ron L for a second. But I don't really care about this feud, and I feel bad saying that. But Sheamus and Jeff Hardy are two guys that I just can't get behind as like a feud, especially the first feud for both of these guys. I know they have a little bit of history, not a lot in the ring, and that's good. But what I don't understand is you have Sheamus, who's a former world champion. I mean, he's done it all. You're bringing him back, trying to rebuild him. And on the other side, you got Jeff Hardy, who, again, is a former champion, done it all. And I just don't understand why you're having these two guys face each other right when they're getting back on TV, because I feel like unless they have really big plans for one of them, which I don't believe they do, you're just going to end up hurting one of them and elevating the other, and I don't think it's going to really go anywhere to where if they let them build up both by having feuds with guys not as big as them, then maybe the feud was a few months from now. That would make a little bit more sense. Are you excited about the Jeff Hardy Sheamus feud that it looks like we're getting?
There's nothing to be excited about. You know, like you were saying, is Cesaro is just another guy who's just grossly misunderused. I'm sorry. Sheamus is a guy who's grossly misunderused. He's been given no direction. I thought there would be something a little more in it for him, like maybe they're going to put him back in the IC title picture or something. They just have him putting him there against a bunch of jabronis for him to just wash through. So I don't understand. And putting Jeff Hardy on the other side of him, it really leaves me with a ton of questions because, you know, Matt's making quite a stir over in AEW. Do you have something more in store? Because, you know, I can't see Jeff Hardy really going that much longer with the career he's had and the way he wrestles.
No, I think that I sign on all of that. Next, we had a tag team match. So the Lucha House Party picked up an upset win over the Miz and Morrison. The losses are starting to pile up for Miz and Morrison. Do you think this is headed to a Miz Morrison feud split, or are they just trying to build up some other tag teams?
I think that we were right in what we were talking about, that they had basically brought this back to eventually create a feud with Miz and Morrison. I am really disappointed in the fact that they're going from making Miz and Morrison champs to getting washed by the Lucha House Party in the span of a couple of weeks. Another thing that I'm tossing in the air that I don't make any sense out of whatsoever.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense that they gave them the titles only to have them lose. The only thing I can, I guess, think of was they wanted to, you know, slowly bring Morrison back, put him in a tag team, show that he still, quote-unquote, has it. So he won the tag team titles with Miz. But it doesn't make a lot of sense. And they're not really laying any breadcrumbs for a heel split or, you know, for the two splitting, other than they did have, I think, the little back and forth after Morrison, you know, won the match at WrestleMania to retain the tag team titles in the triple threat match. But outside of that, we haven't, you know, really seen too much, you know, dissension between these guys. And another surprising move, and SmackDown and Raw had several of them. Lacey Evans qualified for the women's Money in the Bank match. She defeated Sasha Banks. Bayley, of course, accidentally assisted Lacey. She distracted the ref when Sasha would have had her pinned. I personally would have much rather had Sasha win this match, go on to win the briefcase. And to me, you could tease out, and I mean, you've already waited this long. Why not do, you know, with the Sasha Bayley Money in the Bank, similar to what they did with the, you know, the Batista Triple H WrestleMania match at 21, where Batista won the Royal Rumble. He was part of Evolution at that time, and there was dissension, and they were slowly building up. It's honestly very similar to what they've done with the Sasha and Bayley story. I'm assuming they did this because they want to continue to push Lacey Evans, and that's me and you keep going back and forth as we talk about this more, that, you know, Sasha Bayley doesn't really need the title to be, you know, something special. But would you have put Sasha in the Money in the Bank match, or do you think it was smarter to have her lose this opportunity, be cost basically, or taking from her because of Bayley making a mistake? Or do you think it was just right just to put Lacey Evans in because she needs the push more than Sasha does?
I personally am okay with how they're deciding to go about it. We've been chomping at the bit, hoping that this was going to start to bubble over, and they did put a picture perfect type moment can be built. So I'm okay with it. You know, I'm still not really overly thrilled about it being Lacey Evans, but, you know, hopefully what we had talked about in terms of getting to the Money in the Bank, that more of our favorites would be in the mix to kind of get in there. So I'm all right with that.
And the other thing, I guess, you know, thinking about them, we'll get into it on Raw, but they've got three just of the baddest women in wrestling on the Raw side. They're all heels. So you're going to either have Sasha have to almost turn face in the match, because she, to be a heel and to beat Asuka, you know, Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler in a ladder match would be, you know, a little tough to believe. And not to mention, again, you'd have, you know, four of the six participants are heels. So from that standpoint, I guess it does make a little more sense, but we will see. I just hope, again, that they get to it, because I do think the Batista Triple H worked out. That was over about a six-month period, but the Bayley Sasha has been going longer than that. So they need to pull the trigger eventually. The women's tag team titles were defended on SmackDown. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, they retained their tag titles against Carmella and Dana Brooke. Do you think that Alexa Bliss is being used properly? Because I don't.
Honestly, I do. I think using her as, you know, being one of the top women performers to really, you know, double down on legitimizing these titles is a good thing. I was initially expecting with her and Nikki Cross for her to backstab her, but they've actually turned this into a tag team that I am interested, invested in. So I'm all right with how she's being utilized so far.
See, I kind of wish they would have taken the advantage of Braun being the champion, how over, what do they call him, Little Big, and the mixed tag, and have Alexa kind of join up with Braun, whether it just be a friendly relationship, a couple, whatever, have her turn face, and I thought she would be a great challenger to Bayley, especially if we are going to wait for the Sasha Bayley feud, which they continue to drag out. I just think Alexa Bliss is one of the best women's wrestlers there is. I love her character. She's so great on the mic. And it's a little disappointing that she's being left to tag team matches. And again, this is not so much that the tag team titles is like a, you know, putting her down. It's the fact that just like with this match, they got basically no time. They rarely ever do give the women's tag team matches either time to be good, or the quality is just not quite as great in WWE, except for a few exceptions. Triple H.
No,
came
I totally
out,
agree with you there.
Sorry about that, Ron.
Sorry, I keep forgetting. I put myself. No, it's okay. I keep putting myself on mute, and I start talking and realize I'm talking to air.
You're good, buddy. It closed the show. Triple H came out to celebrate his 25 years with the WWE. He would be joined by HBK. Eventually, they had phone calls or FaceTimes from Stephanie, Ric Flair, the Road Dogg. Vince came out in person. I mean, it was pretty entertaining. It was actually creative, which, again, I give them credit for actually trying something. I love that HBK was talking smack about Stephanie. She immediately calls Triple H, and you can, you know, like see her on the camera going, you know, Triple H is saying that, oh, no, he's not making fun of you. Stephanie's like, I can hear him. Y'all, you are on live TV. Like, I literally see y'all right now. It was something different. Flair with just an iconic line telling Triple H as he got off the phone, don't let Shawn super kick you at the end of the segment. I mean, it was pretty good. Vince's stuff was kind of weird. They were trying to be funny, I think, build off of the Firefly Funhouse match where he's kind of laughing at himself, and same thing with Triple H. But one thing that I thought was interesting was they sort of appear to be building some Triple H and HBK beef. Now, granted, they're DX. They make fun of each other. That's what they do, but I think this is the third straight time I read online today that when they've gotten the ring, they've made a comment like, you know, I'm better than you. Shawn started making fun of Triple H. Triple H brought up, how many WrestleMania losses do you have? Am I crazy? Are they trying to build to a Triple H-HBK storyline?
It almost looks like that's where they're going. I like that there were subtle jabs in there from HBK, and, you know, Hunter had to kind of lob some back. I could see it being a thing, you know. Maybe it's something they can kind of plot towards the future for another XT in-house fighting, you know, a little UK versus a regular NXT kind of thing. So I'd be all right with that. I too saw that Vince was that was kind of strange. Like, I was expecting the swagger, but it was like he didn't have the swagger, you know, like the wall. And I know you know what I mean, because he didn't have that confident strut coming out, and it was like, so he would go heelish to joking to, but, you know, he never really had that normal air that he has. So that was just, you know, that threw me off. But I thought it was a pretty entertaining bit in all. I liked the FaceTimes that came in, and, you know, it was quite entertaining for what it was. You know, couldn't do a big celebration without a live crowd, so they made it do what it do.
I really did enjoy it. I'm glad that they tried something different. That's my biggest complaint with WWE right now. Moving on into Raw for Monday night, the show opens, and again, this is exactly what I was just talking about. MVP is hosting a show with the three participants that have qualified for the Money in the Bank match. You got Aleister Black, Rey Mysterio, Apollo Crews. Of course, they're interrupted by Zelina, Andrade, Angel Garza, and Austin Theory. It set up a six-man tag match. I was out of that six-man tag match before it even began. I watched it a second time today and actually watched it, and it was actually a pretty good match. But if I wasn't doing a podcast, I would have never gone back and watched the match again, because I'm just so tired of the same old, same old. Like, just go ahead and announce before Raw starts that six-man tag match is going to be on there, and then let the three participants in the Money in the Bank actually have, you know, their promo or their, you know, interview with MVP. And then if you want to build some tension between them, that makes sense. It just, I'm so tired of the way they start and set up matches on Raw and SmackDown.
Extremely lame. Extremely lame. Like, why are you doing basically the same thing twice? On top of the fact that you and I are consistently saying, you know, give us something new. What they did instead was kind of give us, you know, another one of those dusty endings at the end of all of this. So, you know, yeah, they used an old shtick, which made us roll our eyes, to overshadow what really turned out to be a phenomenal match.
Yeah, I just want them to think about how often they get to the same point on these shows. And it's, I mean, I understand there's only so many ways to set up a match, but I mean, I am so sick of the tag team and six man tag matches that are set up by guys in the ring trying to cut a promo or do an interview, and then somebody interrupts them. It's just like, I'm sick of it. The next thing also really bothered me. They had advertised before Raw and all of Raw up until that point, a Shayna Baszler, Asuka, and Nia Jax triple threat match. I was so excited about this. Instead, Nia Jax attacked the other two women before the bell officially rung. In about a 3 minutes, you know, brouhaha, she ended up knocking both competitors out of the ring with a ladder, then holding it over her head. And next thing you know, they went to commercial. And it took, when they got back from commercial, me to realize what they had done. They said that the match was a no contest because it didn't officially start, and they started fighting. And it's like, A, I hate that finish. If I don't understand why you set up a match if that's going to be the finish, because you didn't have a match. So why advertise it? And then B, like, I just don't know, what are they doing right now? Like, why? All this stuff is pointless. It's like they're trying, I don't know if they're trying to get people to watch or pay attention, but to tease people and then take it away. If they do not have this match, like the Monday after it, Money in Bank this Sunday, right?
Yep, sir.
Okay, so maybe on Monday they would have that triple threat match, but like this was a match I was really looking forward to. They advertised it for a week, and like I said, and earlier on the show, and then to do that, and then for the announcers not even to do a good job of explaining what was going on. Like I said, I had no idea, and I watched it again today just to see if maybe I missed something the first time around. I didn't. They just didn't really explain it until they came back for commercial. I just, like, it's really frustrating. What do you think the purpose or their, what is their thinking trying to do something like this?
Quite honestly, I have no idea. It was bad enough that, you know, we were talking about hopefully they don't mismanage Shayna and coming off of a title loss and all that good stuff. And then you mess up with two of her matches in the last couple of weeks where we didn't really know what the deciding factor was, who won. Oh, I'm sorry. Shayna wasn't disqualified. She won because her opponent couldn't go forward. And so it's like, you know, you guys have we're on lockdown, aren't we? I mean, I understand everyone's still working. Creative, you guys are still working, right? Yeah? Come on. You know, bang your head against the wall a little more and give us something better.
If Nia Jax wins the Money in the Bank, I might could say I understood what they were doing. I don't think they executed it well, meaning that they wanted to look make Nia look really strong. So they had her beat up, you know, Asuka and Shayna, but they didn't want any of the people to take a loss. But again, I'd rather see 5-10 minutes of that and then have a count out or a disqualification than to tease something like that. And the match, I mean, they literally took two bumps and then, you know, she hit them with the ladder. And then it was over. It was just really disappointing with how much they had built it up and advertised it. Next, Bobby Lashley won a squash match. The interesting thing from this is Lana did not come to ringside with him. Bobby Lashley said in an interview with Lana that she was her beauty was distracting, and that was why he didn't want her there. I'm a little confused, though, because Lana is basically a full-time manager now, and if she's not at the ring, what is she doing with Bobby Lashley?
Hopefully they're using this as an angle to maybe diffuse them as a couple, maybe inject some new life and let us actually care about Lana. Maybe she winds up finding another guy, and then that's how her and Lashley kind of keep going at it. So, and then she can also fill that manager's role. Outside of that, I don't know. I still don't really care. So it makes it really difficult for me to actually put much more thought into what are they doing with them, because, again, Lashley proving himself, you know, adding a couple of moves to his skill set. He's already impressive. Just they haven't used him right. And hopefully this is the beginning of pushing something else. Maybe we'll give a crap.
Yeah, I think he's now at this point one of the more underused guys on the roster. You know, you don't have Brock Lesnar. He's obviously not around now. Braun Strowman's on SmackDown. Bobby Lashley is a giant. I mean, he is a beast. I don't understand why he's not the beast of Raw. And you could, I mean, he's big enough and physical enough that if they just rebranded him, they could get away with basically making him, you know, the beast or the Strowman, basically the big, strong, scary guy on their, you know, promotion. And I kind of can't believe I'm saying this, but I feel like that they're wasting Bobby Lashley's talent, which I did not think I would be saying that anytime soon. Another person who they're wasting talent on, Liv Morgan defeated Ruby Riott for the second straight week. Riott has just been a jobber. I mean, quite frankly, since she came back, I am so disappointed about this. I thought Ruby Riott was one of the brightest newcomers in the women's division when she got hurt last year. I really hope that injury doesn't prevent her from ever having a push, because it looked like she was getting ready, you know, with the faction and everything, to be that next heel woman to kind of come up. I just think that they're making the wrong decision here with Liv Morgan being put over Ruby. I understand she's very attractive and there's appeal to her. She's very popular on social media. Do you think that this is the right person to put Liv Morgan over on?
I think so, and it's just going to play to more of the liberation and rediscovery of Liv Morgan. Agree with you on the fact that definitely that's probably the reason she's being pushed. I'm not going to disagree with them pushing her, because I actually used to love her fake Harley Quinn, and now, you know, she's becoming her own woman and all this stuff. But, you know, good for her. So I honestly do think it does make sense to put her over Ruby Riott, so that it's kind of her way to break away. Though I don't understand why they did it 2 weeks in a row. Just, you know, I'll scratch my head on that part. But, yeah, Ruby Riott is being also grossly misused. She is quite talented. She has a wonderful mean streak and can run a – like, there's no face for Ruby Riott at all. And I hope there never really is. It, you know, she plays her role well. And
and she's a great athlete. So I'm just hoping that this is just something that they did for the Liv storyline, and then, you know, hopefully they can put her back in her winning ways soon enough.
So I've already said on this podcast that Bobby Lashley is underused, and I couldn't believe I said that. I'm even more shocked about what I'm about to say. Jinder Mahal returned to action this week, won in a squash. I was really happy to see Jinder. I really got behind him his last run, not when he had the title, but the way he reacted to losing the title and sort of still acting like a big – his presence just changed once he had that strap on his, you know, shoulder, even though he lost it quickly. He just – I think his confidence grew as obviously a performer. I think that they have the perfect heel to go against Drew if Seth is not going to win the belt at Money in the Bank this weekend, or even if the feud extends a little longer and Drew ends up winning that feud. Am I crazy to say that they should push Jinder into a feud with Drew because of their history?
I honestly, it's a slam dunk just like that. I started getting back in right before, like right after Jinder had lost the strap. So I got to see the new and improved, you know, I did get to see some footage of him pre-title. And yeah, I agree with you. He definitely get that swagger to where the head is held high and firm. He's in phenomenal shape right now. You know, and putting him against Drew, you have that 3MB back storyline. These guys are both right now looking extremely jacked. Drew is doing what he should as a I don't know if it's me, and when I'm done, I'd love to hear your thought about it. Do you see that, you know, even though Drew is already a big dude, his last few appearances, he has that kind of extra, you know, jackness to him? Like, similar to how after, like, The Rock and Triple H, when they first kind of broke through and they were taking supplements, and they got that extra, you know, 5-10 pound look on the camera, and it's like, man, look at the size of that dude's chest. It's like Jinder and Drew both have that going on right now, and I would totally be for all of that.
He does look humongous, but I do think part of it is the fact that he's not wearing the like leather chap. I don't even know what you'd call it, gown outfit to the ring, which kind of covered up, you know, part of his body till the match starts. And I don't know about for you, but like when they're wrestling, I don't tend to think as much like, wow, look how big these guys are, because they're all big and jacked for the most part. But when he's just standing there, you know, and his tidy whitey's basically doing a promo, that's when you're like, good Lord, this guy is really big. And I said it on our WrestleMania review. It's amazing when you stand next to Brock Lesnar, and I'm not saying he could whoop Brock Lesnar in a real fight, but it would be believable that Drew McIntyre could beat Brock Lesnar in a real fight. I mean, that's saying something. There's not very many people, maybe other than him and Braun Strowman on the roster, that you could say that about.
Right, right. But you saw what happened when it came to Brock and
exactly.
Braun, when Braun accidentally get that knee, Brock was like, hold this real quick. So,
I will
yeah,
say that
it,
Braun
it, it
took
is nice
like
having
a champ.
Comparable like that. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. I mean, your average man is sleeping for 10 minutes.
I would have been for sure. I'm not an average man, though. So, we talked about Apollo Crews. We'll skip over reviewing the match. Do you think that the angle is real or storyline? I think it's storyline.
I hope it's storyline. I hope that whatever it is, it's just something minor, and they're just kind of putting it off. I don't know, maybe he fell ill or has a nagging injury that he's been told to take it easy on for a month or so. I really don't know. But they finally got me excited about what they're doing with him. So I hope whatever it is, he has a speedy recovery and is back in the ring soon.
The only reason I say I don't believe it's real, at least they're saying it's a leg injury. I went back and watched both of his matches from Raw, and, I mean, the first spot where his knee, you know, supposedly in quotations, buckled, you know, he was in writhing pain, and then for the rest of the match, he's doing all these crazy spots, jumping off the top rope, and then finally at the end of the match, he jumps off the top rope. Andrade moved out of the way. He again landed on both legs, and again, he to me looked like he was acting with his knee buckled. You could be right that it could be some other injury, and they're just obviously using the leg storyline to move him forward, but we've talked about it before. I just hope that they change something about his character. I would love to see him come back a heel because he feels like, you know, this has gotten stolen from him. There's a lot of ways to push him because he's got talent. His character just isn't interesting. Speaking of guys that are not the most interesting, Ricochet and Cedric Alexander won another tag team match this week over two jobbers, so this does seem to be an official tag team moving forward. My question is, how are you supposed to take a team like this seriously when, A, they haven't bothered to give them a name, or B, they haven't given any kind of explanation or backstory for why these two guys have teamed up?
I really don't have a clue. Here's where I'm hoping that they have some card or play that's going to be coming out a little further down the road, which will tie this all into a nice, neat bow for me. But I too, don't get it. They're both quite talented. And, you know, exciting in the ring enough, but neither of them really have that extra oomph. So, like, who's going to be the spokesperson for this tag team? What are they going to be called? What is their aim? What are their goals? I mean, I imagine, of course, every entertainer's goal is to get to the top of your whatever division you're in. But I can't see these guys taking out a Street Profits, a War Raiders, or AOP, or anything like that. So I'm not quite sure what the purpose of this is right now.
And I'm just really disappointed because it would be so easy to just let them do a promo where we've both been overlooked and WWE, you know, beaten up, pushed around, and we join forces because we're not taking it anymore. And it's like, at least then we have a reason why they're together. You understand it. And if you want to turn them heel down the road, you can. If you want to leave them face, you can. But at least you let the audience know why these two guys, who are both singles guys and have had a little bit of success, obviously, in their career to get where they're at, are all the time sudden now a tag team with matching tights.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, you know, these people get paid for this, so I hope you earn your paycheck on this.
I did too. This is the kind of stuff that bothers me. Normally, I know that we can be ridiculous as fans and, you know, the stuff we complain about, but it just, again, how hard is it to do what we just asked? The show closing, because Raw overall, I felt like was pretty disappointing. SmackDown was not great this week, so I have a feeling when we meet this weekend, I just know AEW and NXT's shows are probably going to be better than these two this week. But the closing segment for Raw was really good. Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre had their contract signing for their Money in the Bank World Championship match. Both men are just so good on the mic right now. Seth is, in my opinion, doing his best character work to date. I love this character. He plays such a smug prick so well. And I love how he's got the calm presence. It reminds me a lot of Jericho. I believe it was in the mid to late 2000s he came back, and he was more violent of a heel than he had been in the past, but he was also very calm in the way he spoke. and it almost made it creepy. And Drew has just been really good. I don't know if you've noticed. I love how Drew will break the fourth wall to the camera. And normally that would be really corny. But if you think about it, there's no fans there. So he can't play up to the fans. I think it's really smart that he's playing up to the camera because maybe it gets more kids rooting for him. You know, whatever. I like it. It shows he's got confidence in his character. But anyway, as all contract signings do, it turned into a brouhaha. Buddy Murphy came down and saved Seth Rollins from getting a beating. Seth then gave him a big hug in the middle of the ring. At that time, Drew got up, went for the Claymore, and Seth, I guess you could say, made Buddy the sacrificial lamb because he kind of pushed him into the Claymore and escaped without getting really hurt going into their match. How excited are you about this Seth versus Drew McIntyre match at Money in the Bank? And do you think there is any chance Seth wins and ends Drew's title reign this quickly?
To answer your last question, I think there's only a sliver in terms of where I think things are going to go. Of course, I could be surprised. Seth Rollins is putting on such great work right now. I am totally in agreement with you. Like, the way he – like, I thought this was literally going to be – like, when Drew initially cut him off, was going to be like, all right, listen, I'm signing this. Can we sign this? Can we get on with it? And I thought that was going to be it. And the way that he went on his little calm ramble, saw this zen look and almost see him buying into this whole Messiah aura that he's got going on. And the best part of Raw to me. Both shows, like you said, were very lackluster. Yeah, at least they got it right going home. I'm really excited for the buildup of this, and they're going to put on a great show. Seth, you know, can make a lot of people, especially people with the range of a Drew McIntyre. He's going to make Drew look phenomenal in this match, and this is going to be really great. I still think that Drew holds on to the title a little bit longer.
I really hope that they do that because, I mean, there is a chance that if Vince or the higher-ups within WWE are panicking about Drew being champion because Raw's numbers are down, Seth would be the guy that they would want to put the belt on. I mean, that would be, you know, he's the biggest name really they have on Raw other than Brock, and Brock's not around right now. So I hope that's not the case, but that is a possibility. The other thing I want to talk about real quick before we get out of here, are they setting up Buddy Murphy for a face turn, or is this just restarting, you know, the disciples part of Seth's gimmick?
I'm going to go with the latter. I think they're going to keep going with the disciple thing, although they could wind up doing both, because Drew did kind of speak to the fact that, hey, you know, where's your little, where's your boys at? It's going to be just, you know, you and me when it comes down to it or whatever. And that actually got me thinking for a second. It was like, wait a minute, we haven't seen AOP in a minute. We haven't seen Buddy in a minute. Like, what's going on? So the fact that they use Buddy Murphy to come back out like that, and with the fact that I think Seth is growing into this role, I think we have to hold on to Buddy Murphy just a little bit longer so that they can let this play all the way out.
Well, that is the end of the SmackDown and Raw recap. We will be back on Friday, Saturday, somewhere around then, to do AEW and NXT. I am so excited about AEW. They have got both of their semifinal matches. Cody Rhodes versus Darby Allin, I think, is going to be incredible. Charlotte is going to be, fighting. I don't know if she's defending the title on NXT, so hopefully they'll have some good shows. Ronel, though, before we get out of here, do you want to plug anything?
Absolutely. 2020, our goal is to get 20,000 families into new homes. Get at me to get your credit fixed. You can reach me on Facebook, Instagram. Let's chat. Oh, and, you know, I want to shout out to the Crown since this is my first official day as an All-Star.
That a boy. Damn, it feels good to be a gangster. It's good to be an Ivy All-Star. So, again, please rate and review this podcast on iTunes. Also, again, plug myself. I went on RC's The Televangelist podcast. I can't pronounce that. And we reviewed The Tiger King, this season of Ozark, and this season of Better Call Saul. So you should check those out. But we will be back later this week to go over AEW and NXT. But this has been another edition of Team Turnbuckle, the Raw and SmackDown Weekly Recap Edition. For your hosts, Keith Fleming and Ron L. Tinsley, we'll see you guys soon.